The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Welcome, everyone. Our opening keynote talk is titled Reclaiming Public Values in the Internet and will be presented by Marlene Sticker. Marlene is founder of VOG, a social organization and research institute for creative technologies and social innovation, the prolific advocate for free, honest, and inclusive technology, and honorary PhD. Is also founder of The Digital City, a group that provides free public access to the internet in Amsterdam, and author of the book, Head Internet is Stuck, that's The Internet is Broken. Marlene, please help us understand and tell us, how do we reclaim public values in the internet?
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm very honored to be at this conference. And a lot of the things that I will present are part of the history and the movement, and I feel very much attached to the principles of the free and open source movement. So you will find some of those ideas also back in my presentation. I'm Marlene Sticker. I'm founder of VAAG, which is a future lab, Lab for Technology and Society. We are based in Amsterdam, and now I try to get my presentation running, but it's not moving. That's a pity. Let's see if we can move it like this. Yes, there we are. It's based in a beautiful building in the city of Amsterdam, an old medieval building. We are an independent research institute founded in 1994. There are 60 researchers, and a lot of them have a background in science, in arts, in design, coming from different from the humanities, but also from artificial intelligence, from life sciences as well. And I think our ethos is based as a hacker and maker culture. So we believe in artistic collaboration, civic activism. And over the years, we developed multiple initiatives that then became bigger. For example, Fairphone, I can refer later to that, spin-offs from the VAAG. And in the early years, in 1994, I was also the founder of the Digital City, which then provided internet to free internet to here in Europe for the first time. I want to talk to you about a work that we have worked on for a long time, which is called this is our motto, I think, the theme of our work. Technology is not neutral. We're inside of what we make, and it's inside of us. We're living in a world of connections, and it matters which ones get made and unmade. It's a quote from Donna Haraway from her Cyborg Manifesto. Inspired me over the years, because it tells us that technology is not coming from God. It's not growing out of the earth. It's man-made. These are artifacts. We create technologies. And because they are made by men and women, sometimes they're not neutral. So we're inside of what we make and it's inside of us. We're living in a world of connections, and it matters which ones get made and unmade. So my position is that we have to feel responsible for what we do, for the technologies that we put into the world. And we have to understand that they are always biased. They are always part of our culture. They're always, every technology is an expression also of power and of social economic constellations. So it's not something that is neutral, and then we use technology in a certain way. In the making, we already define some of those power balances and disbalances. I can oversee the last 30 years of the internet, which is basically the years that the internet came into the public being, became the place for people to meet, so not just for scientists or for people from NGOs. And I wrote this book, The Internet is Broken, But We Can Fix It, both to look back, to see what went wrong, to define what is actually, where we're in, what is at stake, but also very much always, I'm always from the position that you can, something which is broken, you can fix it. So it's also this maker culture, this hacker culture, that you can actually move away from what is wrong and you can put your energy and your efforts into something that is better. So what I will present is the idea of the public stack, which is this assumption that you define where are we now and where should we go, and then to help not just techies, which of course are very important in this endeavor, but also people from different backgrounds, from policymakers, designers, the general public, media, journalists, to understand the hidden narratives and also make them feel that there are some, that it's not just that we have to just take it for what it is, that, like it is bad, but that you can actually have action and follow some dreams. So where are we now? It's definitely that we are, our applications, what is underneath the surface is that we work with closed and black box technologies. We are vendor locked in. Big tech is in control, extraction of value. Surveillance capitalist, as of course the way that it's being described, that the business model is based on surveillance, and human values and democracies are at stake. So it's not a very good thing where we are after 30 years of the internet. So where should we go? But where should we be? Not go or this. What should be the technology around us? How should it function? Yeah, the applications in the future. They should be free, open, or public. I think that the term public comes into more and more attention in the sense that open is sometimes to grab for everybody, where public means that you need to have a certain type of governance. And I think also free is also always understood as not as in free beer, but as in freedom. And freedom and governance, there. This is definitely also a political discussion, of course. Are you libertarian? You don't want to have the state involved. When you talk about public, you believe that public institutions have a role in this. But it doesn't mean that the state should be in control. So this kind of terms are quite important actually to really understand. But let's for now say that they have to be free, open, and or public. Of course, the interoperability is really important to be able to break out of the black box and to be not vendor locked in. Society should be in control. It should be regenerative. So no extraction of value, but regenerative by nature. That means also fair and sustainable, and data minimalization instead of creating data in everything and believing that everything should be data, to be very precise and critical about what we actually define as data. I don't think that data should be. But there's an idea about this, like this iceberg that on the top people experience the applications and they don't even know how to understand what's beneath the surface. So it's also important to open up this idea of like what's going underneath the surface, what is happening there, and to understand more like a roadmap. So to understand the different aspects of it. And in this abstraction, we said, okay, let's see what's beneath the surface. There's of course a technology stack. There are many technologies that are beneath the surface, And there are a lot of different ways actually to define a stack. It's a technical term, of course, but we use it here in also as a more accessible way so that other people can, who have not a technical background, can also understand what we mean by it. So it's a technology stack, but before there is a technology stack, there's of course a design process. Certain people are in the process of making the technologies. And this is, as I said, these are manufacturers, artifacts. So there's somebody who's funding it. There's somebody who is governing it. There's somebody who is saying, well, where are we optimizing for? So the design process is really important to understand and to open up the design process. And then underneath the design process, there are already some foundations, some assumptions. So let's go a bit more deeper into that. Because if we want to go if we want to go to a public stack, we have to think about these public values. Like how can we bring the public values back into the technology stack? And of course, we understand, and a lot of times it's being described as you have the Chinese version, the state stack versus the Silicon Valley version, which is a private stack. And the public stack, a lot of people in Europe will claim that they would understand how to make something public, more societal based. And I'm pretty sure this is of course a very easy abstraction, which is not true, because also in China and in Americas, people are trying to get these public values back in place. And also in Europe, there's as many companies that try to be a Silicon Valley company or try to be a big tech company. So it's not that easy. But in the discussions here in Europe, you see this storyline. This is a narrative which is quite strong, and at the moment also helping to get some politicians to move. For example, the GDPR privacy laws, but there are many other laws now on the way, like the Digital Service Act, the Digital Market Act, the Artificial Intelligence Act. So there is something at the moment that helps politicians on the European Commission level and the European Parliament to go for these public values and to understand that they are that they have a say, and they can also help to shape this new the new version of the internet, or the fixing some of the parts that went wrong. So if you go to this foundation, the underlying principles before you go into a design process and before you have a technology stack, I think one of the main problems and one of the major issues is that they sometimes come from philosophy, the assumptions. So for example, humans are biased by default. So technology is not neutral. I just discussed this one. But sometimes it already takes a lot of time to make people aware of it. Especially when you talk with people that are very, very good in statistics, they will say, well, I have data, I have algorithms, this is this, so that, as if they create an objective reality. But in reality, this is, of course, an assumption, because we can, the moment that we measure, we already have an intervention. So there's a whole discussion here going on, which is quite interesting for people that dive into it. But it's important to understand that anybody who's saying, I'm going to datify something, I'm going to make data out of something, it is already an intervention. Nothing wrong there, but it's important to know and to be able to have that discussion before you go further. So there are many, many assumptions that are not being explicit. And I think this is problematic, because then you end up with something that people think is neutral, but it's not. The second part of the, I have an example of it. I'm not sure if it shows here. Yeah, because this is the question, who defines the database? If you ask people how to define their sexuality or their gender, there are many ways that people can do it. Somebody who enables it in a database that people can give like 20, that you give 20 options, you will have totally different reflection on sexuality and gender than if you give only 3 options, or maybe this should not be in the database at all. So these are very important questions that are culturally based, politically based, and they're not objective. The second layer, which is important, do you believe in the fundamental rights? So do you believe that human rights should be in place? Some people will say, well, not necessary. I think it's really important to make it very, very explicit. So one of the questions, for example, is do we have the idea of the dignity of the body? So we're not selling body parts. Why don't we also define that the information about my personal life is part of my personal dignity? And why should it be possible to trade information about a person when it definitely is intrusive and it doesn't really help to keep the integrity of your personhood? So these kind of questions are really important, like what kind of fundamental rights are at stake and what kind of things do you allow the technology to do? A third element of this of the fundamentals here it goes. Maybe there's an example where you can make them also very, you can also classify, of course, this kind of and see if applications are actually taking care of the fundamental rights. A third part of the foundation is the social economic consideration. So who owns it? What's the financial economic model? Is it non-extractive or regenerative? Can I repair it? Is it publicly owned, or is it? Do I own my own data? All those kind of questions. Is it venture capital that drives the company, or is it a non-for-profit? Is it a B Corps, or is it? So all these kind of questions about the socio-economic considerations behind the one that gives the assignment to build technologies, you have to take into account. And a lot of the times, this is not being discussed. So you have to ask the question like, who owns it? And there's a big difference in, for example, optimizing for hyperscale data centers, which are owned by Meta or any other big company. And then you give your land, you give your energy to this kind of hyperscale data centers. Or not. You can't just say, well, it's a data center, it's neutral. You really have to understand who owns it. What is the purpose? Can you think that it really contributes to the economic well-being of the environment? Does it is at cost of somebody else? Of course. So these are questions, political questions, economical questions that you have to put into being. And so then sometimes you can also see that for booking hotel rooms, or you can use booking.com, which is an extractive model, which doesn't give any say to the people that are actually renting out their places. Or you go for Boonpack, which is a new startup that is based on these public values and give also a say to the people that are actually renting out, and also giving a different idea about how to give back their money and how to give more value to other people. So it is definitely the whole company changes, but also the whole idea about how they use, for example, dark patterns is changing, because booking.com will try to make you make decisions as soon as possible by using dark patterns, and Moonbeck will not do that, will not try to manipulate you, because they base their whole business concept on this kind of public values. So again, it's very important to understand that kind of principles that are underneath the surface of the technology. And then lastly, for the foundation, of course, is the governance and the supervision. So how do you govern the technology? Is it privatized? Is it venture capital that is driving it? With their type of control? Is society in control? Is it a data commons, for example, as another way of governing data? Is it a data trust? So this kind of questions is of course the deeper discussion, is it free or open or public, is also here. Something being free or open doesn't mean that it's not that the supervision and the governance that is in place is always a healthy governance. So that doesn't mean we have to be explicit about it. So this kind of question, so we bring when we put this kind of the public stack thinking into the practice, we bring people together on this kind of topics and ask them to be more explicit. So for the city of Amsterdam, for example, we're looking into how to make the city more the technology that is in the city to make it more societally and publicly owned. So that means that also the city government has to rethink how they relate to the technology and how they do their procurement, for example, and how they buy technology in. So you can also make it very practical and put it into a questionnaire saying you have to make sure that you score really well on these questions. This is another example which is really important for how we want to move on with technology. Do we want to put all our genetic information or the data about our microorganisms that really define us and are really important, of course, to understand ourselves better? So the data in itself can be very valuable. Do we want to give it to companies like 23andMe? Or what we're trying to set up now is a gene co-op, like a cooperation that deals with the DNA, which gives you your ownership about your own DNA, but you can also have you can also contribute to, for certain cases, to share parts of that information, for example, for scientific research. So it really makes a difference if you do it with 23andMe or with the gene co-op. And this kind of decisions should be very explicit. And I think we have been coming from a area that we thought like the markets can do everything. And we have to come back and say, no, we need other types of mechanisms to make value and to create value. If we go back to the stack now, then now we're entering this phase, like if we define all this, the basic questions, then the question is who designs, who is at the table, who is actually securing that these fundamental questions are also being part of the design process. And again, there's a lot to say about that, the design process. Not a lot of people from informatics would say that they design, actually, but I think they do. I think if you create a protocol, it's definitely a design, because you design certain behavior, certain patterns, the if-then principle, if this, then that. So all this kind of, I think code in itself is a design, not just the physical representation of the code, but also the code in itself. So I think it's very important to understand the key enabling methodologies that you can put into place in design processes to make it more inclusive, to make it more interdisciplinary or transdisciplinary. And I think a lot of the key questions are now in this design process, how to bring people from different backgrounds together and understanding each other's languages, because I think a lot of people don't even know how to talk to each other. And to see technology not as just as a like pure technology thing, but to see it as a social, cultural, entwined product, which is our entity, which then helps us to say, well, we can't just go on, give it to the techies. We have to understand how we work together and how we bridge these kind of different language barriers and understanding of each other. So there's a big difference if you go for Hollandse Luchten, which is a project of the Waag, which is based on citizen science, on co-creation, and on open technologies, and so on and so on. Or your Sidewalk Labs, which I think had this, of course, was working in Toronto, and they said, well, we know what's good for the people. We as experts will make beautiful technology which will work in your city, and we will govern your part of the city. And so these are two totally different views on how to bring technology to this to our inner world. Whereas Hollandse Luchten, the citizen science model, is that people actually need to have an equity, a stake, an ownership, and also a say in how something is going to function, but also a certain type of knowledge as well. There has to be a certain literacy to understand what technology does in your environment and how you then can use these kind of data that you want to have about your environment, how you can use it also in the sense that you can have to influence policymaking, for example. And I think the whole concept of Sidewalk Labs is a terrible concept where the technology will define us and we have to define the technology. I think this is an important part of the idea about this design process. So now when we move more into the idea of the technology stack, and I think there are a lot of layers and a lot of different ways to define it, but let's go through some of them, and I have some examples. And I guess, especially in this context, many of you will have maybe other examples, or maybe you would define it a little bit different, but let's see how, we define it in this way to open it up for people that are not always that much into all the details and very specific knowledge. So how can we design the technology we rely on from this public perspective? And then this is a way to sort of visualize the stack, whereas we have some layers and we have some fields, because, well, security would sort of be an issue for all the stack layers. So we define some of it as a field. And maybe it's a bit too short to go into depth of all of them, but let's look into some of them. So for example, the application layer, for the applications, it's clear that we have a big problem that we only have two big stores for apps. And so who's controlling the app stores? For a lot of people, they don't even know that there's maybe other opportunities, but you're well informed, you know that you can do it maybe differently. But this is basically how it functions now. And it's as if the grocery stores are only two grocery stores and they define how they will look after the safety of food safety, it's a really weird idea. So here we already have a big problem. And the dominance of these two big tech industries are already telling us that something is wrong, that these app stores are being controlled by two big companies, and there's almost no alternatives for it, and not well to be used alternatives. Another part of the story, of course, is the operating systems. I've been extensively being asked, what kind of operating system are you going to use? I think it's a great question when you enter a conference, because you will not see it presenting me this, well, it's a PDF. But it's a good question. And of course, people should be able to control and adapt the operating system on the devices, which is not true, or it's not really easy, or it's not the default setting. So again, there's a lot happening in this field of operating systems for a long time already. We have seen some big successes, but when it's about mobile phones, for example, it's almost impossible to choose your own operating system without being a very, very well-informed person. So yeah, so you're absolutely familiar, of course, with this kind of questions about operating systems. Another part of the stack, of course, is firmware and drivers. The whole question about hardware, of course, is a big issue. A lot of it is not open. It's not accessible. So if you own a device, you have the right to change its firmware and drivers. It has been in the past. So of course, it's part of the business model not to let us do this. And again, that's why I also always say, when you look at the stack, you have to start with what are the social economic definitions, because if somebody wants to make money because you can't make your own choices, that already clarifies how we get into this problem. So being able to have, so the whole idea about open technology, open hardware, open drivers, and so on is important, and we know that we're not near there. It's really a big fight there. So of course, a very nice example for the moment is the framework laptop. You must be familiar with that. I'm very, very happy that it's shipping also to Europe at the moment. I think this is so we get to, this was of course in the 80s, this was normal that you would put your own computer together and you would sort of, and it would, was able and it was open, you could do this. And now we have to sort of reclaim it and reinvent it. But happily, we're seeing companies and initiatives to do so. But the next part is we should be able to know the origins of the raw materials in our devices, because it's of course a huge ecological footprint of all the stuff that we put into our nice gadgets and so on. And so for a good example for that is Fairphone. It's a spin-off from De Waag. It started as a research into the raw materials, the coltan, and also the gold that goes into our gadgets, and try to make this fair and sustainable production lines. but also make it repairable. So with Fairphone, we try to hit a lot of the boxes to make it repairable, that you can choose your own operating system, to be very clear about the working conditions in which these gadgets are being made, for to have a fair price for the workers, but also have a sustainable concept in this. So, normally you should say that, why should we not make that normal for all the products, the technology products that we use? At the moment, it's quite a problem. The last of the stack we wanted to tell people about is, of course, the internet infrastructure in itself. So it's a public utility. It should be a public utility. It should be government accordingly. But we know that large parts of the infrastructure is privatized. And so this is an interesting initiative coming from the European Commission to have its own internet cable from Portugal to Brazil. And this came into the policymaking because they realized in 2013, because of Snowden, that all the cables were intercepted and that they didn't have any say about how and who is looking at the communication, the data that flows through the cables that were already in existence. So I think at this moment, these huge ships with these huge cables are actually going over the ocean to lay this new cable. At the same time, we know that Google and Facebook and Meta are building their own infrastructure deep under, like, the physical infrastructure, and, well, that's the same for satellites. So this is definitely also a big question mark. How are we going to deal with the ownership over the infrastructure? Yes, of course, then the fields, I mean, I'm trying to figure out if we can have a little bit of time maybe for questions, but I want to finish it with this. We have, of course, also the field. So, of course, the question about how to deal with the control about data and algorithms. Luckily, this has been under attention of a lot of, it's not as unknown question as it was. And there's a lot to do about oversights over algorithms, privacy laws and so on, but there's a lot of repair that has to be done. So I think this movement of reclaim your face is a quite important movement. I also love the new coalition that came into being in Europe called People Versus Big Tech. It's a group of around 100 organizations that then represent 70 million Europeans, and we are collaborating on this as one of the organizations, but we also can I'm very, very impressed by the lobby knowledge, the precise knowledge, the heuristic knowledge that this group can mobilize, and it has a lot of influence already in lawmaking in Europe, and also, of course, this kind of campaigning, so to make it more publicly known that you can reclaim your face, that you can say no to facial recognition in streets, and that you can go to your city and make the politicians know that this is not a no-go, that we don't want to have biometric mass surveillance in our public spaces and in the applications that governments, but also companies, are using. So this kind of campaigning around these issues about data and data control and algorithms are very, very important. Another field, of course, is the standardization and the way that they guarantee open ecosystems. It's a huge importance. For example, we using protocols that are storing data centralized, or are we going to go for protocols that are distributed, as the same question, of course, originally from the internet: is it a centralized, decentralized, or distributed architecture? And we only just had this whole discussion with the Corona apps. PEPPT was a centralized protocol, and DP3T was a decentralized protocol. And for the first time a part of it, I saw that this was. People could understand that this was a difference. People started to have a real debate about protocols, which I really thought was fun. And in the end, I'm not saying that I was in favor of Corona apps, like the proximity measurement, for example. But it was interesting that because of campaigning and discussing this, the distributed version protocol won in the end, which is a good thing, that people understood that this makes a difference and that it's important to make this explicit. Yeah, of course. I mean, the whole question about security, it's huge. So I'm not even going to touch it, but technology should be secure so that we can rely on it safely. And of course, the whole discussion about encryption is here. And again and again, we have to have the discussion about encryption and so on. But yeah, we have to every year, every 2-3 years, especially in times of war, a lot of people will come and say, now we need to open up encryption, or the state should have access to the information, or they have the key. And again, we have to explain that it's not possible. You can't have a secure internet if you have no end-to-end encryption. And lastly, maybe when we use a service, we should be able to look inside the black box. Yeah, this is also the whole repair. You can't accept black box technology in a society that wants to be democratic. It's not, you can't sort of combine them. You can't have, and I'm going back to in the early days, I think in the 80s, there was this beautiful, there's a documentary where Richard Stallman talks to, I think it's somebody from Apple, and then they discuss the idea, do you want to have in your basement technology, do you want to live in a house where you don't know who's inside of your basement? So this whole idea about intellectual property, because you have to have your ownership about it, and that's why you want to have it secretly, or to be black boxed. We have to make sure and very clear that open is not so much about sharing, it's much more about freedom. And I think this discussion, I know that this whole conference is based on this concept, it's coming from this idea of freedom. And I think I just want to stress how important I think this discussion still is. So if we want to have public principles, rule of law, and all layers of the public stack, we probably might have then a safe and just digital future, but not just a safe and just digital future. I think it is basically important for our future, because technology is touching upon everything. And well, you know that, but you can't just say there's the technology and here is just the rest of the world. It is intertwined. So if we can't solve this problem, we are in big trouble. We are already in big trouble, but I think we can fix it because there are people like you out there in this conference. So I give maybe I have a little bit time maybe for some questions, but I want to end with an optimistic note that I think in the last 30 years I have been very desperate about this movement, about the whole development, and only the last few years I realized that more and more people understand this discussion that we have here today, and that there are more and more supporters for it. So I hope we can fix it, but we need some time. So I think we should make a roadmap for 5-10 years to get all the companies and organizations and public institutions aware of this and to make decisions accordingly. So to put their money in a different way, to have another procurement process, and to invest in free and open and public data, hardware, and algorithms. Thank you so much.